You know, usually when you renovate a house, you move out,
Oh,
right?
yeah. You don't stay there.
Exactly. Like, you don't try to sleep in the bedroom while a crew is, you know, tearing out the drywall 2 feet from your face. You hand over the keys and you just wait for the dust to settle.
You'd have to be crazy to stay in it.
But today, we are looking at a stack of documents explicitly telling you, and yes, I'm talking directly to you, the listener, to live inside that dust, to sit right in the noise and the absolute chaos of, well, tearing down your own professional identity.
It is, it's a massive structural change. I mean, we are looking through an incredibly direct, customized set of personal feedback notes for this deep dive.
Yeah, these are just generic
No,
articles.
not at all. It's blind spot assessments and strategic reflections tailored exclusively for you. And the mission outlined in these sources, it isn't about like tweaking your workflow or finding a new productivity hack.
Which is usually what people want,
Yeah,
right? The quick fix.
exactly. But this is about an evolutionary leap. It's about moving from being a highly reliable, high-performing execution engine to becoming a visionary system architect and author.
And reading through these notes, the very first thing that jumps off the page is this massive disconnect. Because, I mean, on paper, everything looks phenomenal.
Oh, absolutely. You're shipping products, managing crises,
Yeah.
people rely on you.
Right. From the outside, it is this perfect portrait of success. But the blind spot assessment points out that internally, your day-to-day reality actually feels incredibly thin to you. Which, why is that happening?
Well, it's because of a really fundamental misalignment in how you operate versus how you're wired.
Okay, unpack that a little.
So the assessments show you are naturally driven by internal coherence. You know, you
No.
thrive on deep thinking, framing complex problems, connecting dots across different domains.
I'm putting together a really complicated puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. For you, the puzzle pieces have to fit together logically in your head for the work to feel meaningful. But, and here's the trap, you keep placing yourself in environments and systems that reward visible output, you know, task completion and optics.
So you're basically feeding a machine that only cares about speed and volume, but your brain actually wants to build like elegant architecture.
Which creates a fascinating psychological trap because you feel that thinness, that lack of depth in your daily work, and you misinterpret it.
Also,
You read it as restlessness, or you think maybe your curiosity is just pulling you in too many directions. But the feedback here is pretty blunt. It is a systemic mismatch. The sheer act of executing is quietly draining you.
wow. Okay, so if stepping back means things temporarily slow down, we really have to look at how your speed is actually affecting the people around you.
Yeah. This part is crucial.
Because the notes highlight the secondary blind spot that honestly blew my mind. They call it the intimidating competence problem.
Such a great phrase.
Right. Because you think you come across to your team as scrappy, approachable, maybe a little intense, but fundamentally human. But others experience you as being so fast that you're constantly three moves ahead.
You enter a room, and people realize very quickly that you already have the answer. Or at least, you know, you have a 95% conviction in your answer.
It's like putting a governor on a sports car engine. Your competence is literally capping the RPMs of everyone else in the room.
Because they know the system will just autocorrect to your answer anyway.
Exactly. They stop trying to push the boundaries of the problem and just defer to your certainty. It's like playing chess with someone who already knows your next five moves. Eventually, you stop trying to win and just try not to lose.
Right. And that deference, it deprives you of something critical, which is productive friction.
Wait, if they're not getting pushback, how does that actually hurt them? I mean, isn't it easier if everyone just agrees?
Not for you. You are an individual who needs rigorous debate to refine that internal coherence we talked about. But because you present your ideas with such finality, you kill the friction.
Oh, I see.
And the tragedy is how you interpret their silence. When they don't challenge you, you assume they just lack strategic depth.
You think, oh, they just don't see the big picture.
Exactly. When in reality, they're simply intimidated by the wall of certainty you project.
So you end up doing all the heavy cognitive lifting for everyone, which just reinforces your role as the execution engine. That's a vicious cycle. How do you actually break that?
The actionable fix from the sources relies on purposeful restraint.
Okay, what does that look like in practice?
In the first third of any meeting, you must actively hold back your cleanest framing. You cannot walk in and deliver the perfectly synthesized solution. You have to force others to externalize their thinking.
By doing what, though? Just asking them to brainstorm.
No, not just open brainstorming. By asking highly targeted, destabilizing questions. Things like, Where do you think this assumption breaks? Or what are we completely blind to in this approach?
Oh, so you purposefully make your own uncertainty visible.
Yes, even if you have 80% conviction, you need to say, look, I have a working theory, but I want us to stress test it before we commit.
But what if the internal team is already too conditioned? Like, what if they still won't push back because that dynamic is already so baked in?
The sources actually anticipate that exact problem. If your immediate circle can't provide that organic friction, you have to synthesize it externally.
Oh.
The notes explicitly suggest using platforms like intro.co to find high-level experts, people who have zero political alignment with your company and zero context on your past successes.
Wait, you literally pay someone just to argue with you?
Basically, yeah. You pay them specifically to ruthlessly challenge your first principles. You need people who are immune to your intimidating competence.
That is wild, but it makes so much sense. So if you're stripping away your role as the ultimate problem solver and you're no longer the execution engine, where is your value now?
Pulling directly from the text, the message is uncompromising. It says, you believe your edge is execution. It isn't anymore.
Ouch, that's direct.
It is. Your true edge, the thing that will define your next decade, is pattern recognition and judgment.
Which actually brings up a quote from the feedback that is just devastatingly accurate. Let me find it. Here. It says that by solving problems others should metabolize themselves, you make yourself indispensable short-term and invisible long-term.
Indispensable short-term, invisible long-term. It's so true.
It's brilliant.
If you're the person who fixes the plumbing every time it breaks, you know, you'll always have a job. But you will never be asked to design the city's water infrastructure.
I have to push back on this a little bit, though, because execution is exactly what built your competence capital. It's how you got the reputation, the roles, the influence in the first place.
Oh, absolutely. It got you here.
Right. So if you just stop fixing things, isn't there a massive risk that the system just crashes and you look completely incompetent?
The fear of the system crashing is entirely valid. Oh. And honestly, things will temporarily break.
Oh, great. That sounds fun.
But the highest leverage you have right now is deciding what not to do and narrating the why behind that decision. You have to transition from providing solutions to providing decision frames.
Okay, let's unpack the mechanism there. What is the actual difference between a solution and a decision frame?
A solution ends the conversation. It's, here is how we fix the bug.
Right. Clean, done, move on.
Right. But a decision frame forces the person bringing the problem to evaluate the geometry of the problem themselves. When someone brings you an escalation, you respond with a frame.
Like what kind of frame?
Like what are the irreversible components of this issue versus the reversible ones? Or if we do absolutely nothing about this for 48 hours, what is the actual casualty rate? Mm-hmm. You force them to metabolize the crisis.
The sources actually give a brutally practical example of this. They mandate that you completely ignore Salesforce escalations that come to you via Slack.
Yes, that is a perfect illustration of breaking the execution habit.
Because, I mean, if a system requires you to act as human duct tape outside the formal process, then the system is fundamentally broken.
Exactly.
By ignoring the Slack message and forcing the escalation through the agonizingly slow formal Salesforce process, you ensure the system's failure becomes visible to everyone. Not just you. It has to break publicly so it can be redesigned permanently.
Furthermore, they suggest a 30-day no default yes rule.
Oh, I love this one.
It's powerful. For an entire month, your automatic response to any new request or project must be, let me think about whether this is the highest leverage use of my attention. You buy yourself the cognitive space to apply judgment rather than just reflexive execution.
See, logically, stepping back and letting things break makes total sense. It frees you up to do higher level work. But emotionally,
it's terrifying.
Yeah. It feels absolutely terrifying to drop the very behaviors that make you feel valuable today. I imagine there are some pretty powerful stories you were telling yourself to justify staying in the weeds.
Oh, high performers are incredibly adept at rationalizing their comfort zones. And for you, your comfort zone is execution. The text identifies the core psychological blocker here as the clarity illusion.
The clarity illusion? Tell me about that.
You believe you are waiting for a perfectly clear signal, like a bulletproof new role or a guaranteed outcome, before you fully commit to being a system architect. But the truth is, Clarity is waiting for you to commit so the noise can burn off.
Oh, wow. So you want the green light before you take your foot off the brake.
Exactly.
But it's like an intersection that operates on sensors. The light doesn't change until you pull forward into the intersection.
That's a great way to put it. And that leads to a really profound distinction the notes make between patience and tolerance.
I thought this part was brilliant.
Right. Because you tell yourself you're being patient. You think you're strategically waiting for the optimal moment to transition. But the assessment argues you are actually just being tolerant.
And what's the difference practically?
Patience is actively waiting to strike. Tolerance is passively staying in situations that no longer compound. And you justify it with terms like loyalty or maintaining optionality.
You're just refusing to close a door until a crystal clear new one is already open.
Yes.
So what are the specific lies keeping that door propped open?
The assessments highlight two main ones, lie two and lie six. Lie two is the belief that I can do both.
Meaning I can be the visionary system architect and the day-to-day operational fixer.
Exactly. And look, you have the raw intellectual capability to do both, sure. But by splitting your force, you dilute the identity shift. If people still see you as the fixer, they'll treat you as the fixer.
And what's lie six?
Lie six is the deeply held assumption that if it's the right move, it will feel obvious.
Ah, and the notes say otherwise.
The sources are unequivocal here. It will never feel obvious. Stepping into the architect role will feel exposed, risky, and highly ambiguous. You are waiting for an emotional certainty that simply does not exist at this altitude of leadership.
Which feeds directly into what the notes call the valley of misclassification. This feels like the most painful part of the entire transition.
It really is the crucible of the identity shift. The valley of misclassification is this 6 to 12 month period where people simply won't know what box to put you in.
Because you aren't managing the daily crises anymore, but your visionary systems haven't fully yielded public results yet.
Right. You go to a Tuesday afternoon meeting or a networking event and someone asks what you do. And suddenly you don't have a clean, punchy answer.
You sound vague. And to a high performer who is used to immediate respect, that ambiguity feels exactly like losing relevance.
Yes. But the notes point out that you are operating way below your existential risk tolerance.
What does that mean?
Think about your baseline. You take massive physical risks in sports. You take intellectual risks by tackling incredibly complex domains. But you fiercely protect your professional identity as the flawless, reliable executor.
Wow.
To become the architect, you have to emotionally accept being temporarily misunderstood. It is a necessary, unavoidable signal of growth.
Okay, so we've named the emotional blockers, but how do you physically restructure your life to embody this? Because you can't just think your way into a new identity, you know? You have to build a new operating system.
The architectural blueprint starts a pretty brutal reality check about your capacity. Your constraint right now is not a lack of options. It's not a lack of intellect or opportunity.
What is it?
Your absolute constraint is a desperate need for subtraction. You have too many anchors.
And the directive in the text here is intense. It mandates that you kill 30% of your surface area in the next 90 days. And it makes a very specific, aggressive distinction, not delegate, kill.
That distinction is the entire ballgame.
But hold on, kill 30% of their surface area. In a real business, if you just drop 30% of your responsibilities, things catch fire. Initiatives fail. How is that actually viable advice for someone operating at this level?
Because if delegating an initiative keeps it on your mental dashboard, it still occupies your cognitive bandwidth. You are still managing the person doing the execution.
Right. You're still thinking about it.
Exactly. If a task, a project, or an initiative does not actively build your new identity as a system architect, it is actively detracting from it.
Even if dropping it means it catches fire.
Yes. Because if it catches fire without you, then it wasn't a scalable system to begin with. You have to remove it entirely to create space for your actual thesis.
The 10-year arc. The notes outline a massive overarching thesis for your next decade. It's about designing and articulating how intelligent systems should be built so they increase human agency rather than replace it. Which, I mean, that is a colossal mandate.
It is. And to achieve it, your output has to fundamentally change. You can no longer think in terms of writing articles or posts.
Right. You have to start building architecture and an intellectual property.
Exactly.
Unpack that for me, because those words get thrown around a lot. What is the actual mechanism that separates a really good post from architecture?
The framework in the notes defines architecture through five specific traits. It has a formal name. It consists of distinct interacting components. It contains an inherent tension. It applies across multiple domains, and it evolves over time based on stress testing.
Wait, why does an architecture need inherent tension? What does that actually do?
Well, without tension, it's just a rule book. And a rule book tells you exactly what to do in every scenario, which requires zero judgment.
Oh, I see.
Tension, like balancing speed of deployment against the safety of the user, forces the person utilizing your system to make a judgment call. An architect doesn't give you the answer. An architect gives you the boundaries within which you must apply your own judgment.
And the cross-domain application proves it's a universal principle, not just some localized hack. The notes actually provide two incredible real-world applications of this for projects you're currently working on. Let's look at your AngelCon initiative. Right now, you're treating it like an exercise in portfolio diversification, which is pure operator thinking.
Right. To elevate AngelCon into architecture, it must become a repeatable framework. You need to use it to develop a public model for what you're calling agency-positive startups.
So it has to be a system for evaluating early-stage design that anyone can use, not just a ledger of your personal investments.
Exactly. It has to shift how the industry categorizes you.
And then there's the feedback on your GLP-1 memo, which is fascinating because it tackles your communication style directly. The notes point out that your current draft reads way too much like finished thinking. It's too polished, too bulletproof.
And the directive is super counterintuitive, it says. Make it 20 to 30% shorter, rougher, and explicitly frame it as, here is how I am currently seeing this landscape, rather than a finalized argument.
It's like a math teacher demanding to see your messy work on the chalkboard instead of just the final answer.
That's a perfect analogy.
Because when you present a bulletproof memo, there is no surface area for anyone else to engage with. By showing the messy math, by making your uncertainty visible, you invite collaboration. You externalize your mental model so others can interact with how you think, not just consume what you deliver.
And to ensure you're actually executing this shift every single day, the text offers a really stark metric for tracking your coherence.
Yeah, this part was a gut punch.
You need to redefine what a successful day looks like by asking one supple, brutal question. Did I spend 60 uninterrupted minutes in the zone doing work only I can do?
Like designing a framework or deep thinking on the secondary consequences of a system, the messy math.
Yes, and if you cannot protect that one single hour for your highest leverage architect-level work, then the system owns you that day. You do not own the system.
Synthesizing all of this, the gravity of the shift is just immense. You are actively, purposefully moving away from being the highly capable leader who ships products, who everyone calls when the house is on fire.
Right, you're leaving that behind.
And you are stepping fully into the identity of the person who sees where the systems are going before they even get built.
But it requires prying your hands off the steering wheel of the execution engine.
Which we know is hard.
It requires enduring that valley of misclassification we talked about. You have to tolerate a muddy, confusing narrative about yourself for a while. And ultimately, it means choosing deep resonance and long-term architecture over short-term relevance.
But the thing is, you are someone who already easily tolerates physical strain. You tolerate intense cognitive strain. You can handle long, grueling arcs without any immediate payoff. Like, working hard does not scare you in the slightest. Boredom scares you significantly more than effort.
The challenge isn't your capacity for work. The challenge is your capacity to let go of the work that no longer serves you.
Which brings us to a final thought, and this wasn't explicitly laid out in the notes, but it feels like the ultimate consequence of this entire deep dive.
I'm curious what you took from it.
If you refuse to step out of the execution role, right? If you keep jumping in to fix every problem because it's faster and it's more comfortable, what happens to the next generation of leaders around you?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You are currently suffocating them with your competence. By refusing to let the system break, you are actively preventing your team from learning how to rebuild it.
That's a heavy realization.
So my final question to you is this. What are you genuinely willing to sacrifice? Whether it's your comfort, your reputation as the flawless executor, or the immediate admiration of your peers, what are you willing to sacrifice to finally become the architect?
Because if you never step out of the execution engine, you will never train the people who are supposed to build your legacy.
Exactly. Good luck on this incredible new chapter. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.